of the reasons they were so valuable in battle. Most tried to get them to work non-stop, which meant that once you got a control spell through in a duel, you can deal damage until your opponent dies, without letting them touch you once. Players whose weapons of choice were knuckle dusters, swords, and the like, simply counted cooldown seconds, repeatedly using all kinds of unpleasantness that would bind you hand and foot. But Bowlegs did not plan on a situation when he'd be hit by his own attack, and Payback was a bitch. He could have hit him first, and then unleash a chain of attacks and abilities. It would have cost him a few HP, but he'd have Ross in the palm of his hand. And now his quarry was no longer within reach. Ross got to the opposite side of the arena and turned around. The warrior strove to move onward, but his legs were still bound by that cloying mist, slowing down his every movement. The fury release effect had already worn off, so the pet could use his ability without much risk of failure. The warrior looked at Ross without blinking and asked him, without any malice in his voice, "Got enough mana left?" "Enough for you," replied Ross nonchalantly, hitting his opponent with a chaos arrow. "All right, let's see how it goes." The warrior took a few more steps, then started spinning like a top. His body flashed red. An array of red light hit Ross, making him sway a little and interrupting the casting of a new chaos arrow. His HP bar flickered for the very first time. He lost around 7%. He quickly cast Entangling Roots. The debuff on his pet would only last another second or two. The warrior used another ability, also a ranged attack. Once again, it took away a few points off his HP bar. Everything was crystal clear. He must have despaired of his attempts to catch up with Ross, and thus opted for a change of tactics. Warriors, likewise all the other melee fighter classes, could use a limited set of ranged skills. Their range is short, and many are subject to irritating restrictions concerning weapons and other stuff, but if they're developed to a certain extent, they are capable of dealing solid damage, so you can deal an overly agile enemy a few painful scratches. Bowlegs did not develop any of those abilities. His strong suit was close-quarter combat. Otherwise, he could have dealt a lot more damage to Ross. The level gap was huge, and his equipment was chosen specifically for battles against mages. Nevertheless, Bowlegs still dealt good damage. Apart from that, one of his abilities also transferred some of the HP lost by Ross to him. Thus, the warrior could heal himself a little. Vampire skills of this sort were highly popular, and different variations could be found among all sorts of classes. Ross stayed put and hit back with chaos arrows. He tried fireball twice, but to no avail. His opponent's resistance was just too high. Another attempt to remove the buffs also proved unsuccessful, yet he still had to keep a close eye on the spell's cooldown time to try it over again and again. Success would mean a tremendous advantage. The warrior's HP bar was nowhere near full before this battle of attrition had started, but he soon caught up with Ross and then overtook him. He was starting to get the upper hand. The audience, previously restrained, started to cheer. Bowlegs was their star, whereas Ross was an unknown quantity. Many found it altogether incomprehensible that as unlikely a battle could have taken place in such a well-respected place. The HP bar was down to a half, then a third, then a quarter. Ross kept losing his HP, and the crowd started to roar, finally showing their true feelings. The strange battle would be over soon, it seemed. As the audience's emotions reached their peak, Ross, who had previously just been hurling chaos arrows at the enemy, as soon as the spell would cool down, and used something new. A healing spell. He cast several on himself, simple healing as well as regeneration. His HP bar, dangerously close to zero up until very recently, instantly jumped back further than the center and kept expanding slowly due to the effect of regeneration. The audience piped down and was no longer quite as mirthful. There were some yells of surprise and outrage. Bowlegs looked perturbed too and was thrown off his rhythm of using sequences of complementary skills with immaculate precision. Ross got back to Chaos Arrows, but now he had a lot more HP than his opponent. The battle became a contest of who had the most mana, and Ross knew that his opponent was vastly inferior to him in this respect. Warriors never have much mana. They are physical classes, after all, so there's no point for them to expand their reserves using stat points or equipment bonuses. On the other hand, warrior skills were mostly dependent on fury and didn't use that much mana. Ross, on the other hand, used it in bucketfuls, so the war of attrition tactics could have made sense after all, especially if there were no restrictions. That is, if one could use alchemical potions, those restoring mana in particular. It takes time to restore. It doesn't happen immediately after all, so the mages can run into situations when they empty their reserves completely by using spells that consume a lot. The fact that potions were forbidden at the arena worked against Bowlegs and not Ross. Warriors didn't use much mana, so they could restore their supply easily with potions. Mages had it much harder. Still, the level gap and other factors would make it impossible to predict how the battle would play out in this case. Not in Ross's case, though. He had as much mana as he needed. He was one weird noob, after all. He could hold out even if three fighters of the same class as his opponent pelted him with their abilities from a distance, whereas they would eventually be sent to their respawn points. They kept standing like that, hurling all they could at each other. Ross would heal himself occasionally. The warrior used vampire skills, but they didn't benefit him much. His HP bar kept shrinking. The audience started to buzz in confusion. Their star boy was about to take a beating. That was when the great Korean random number generator finally worked in Ross's favor. He tried another debuff and succeeded. The three rows of positive effect icons displayed underneath Bowleg's name flashed red and disappeared. The opponent hit him with a spell automatically, but it worked a lot slower now. It was like he'd been trying to dance underwater. The damage was much lower this time. On the contrary, Ross managed to take off around 10% with a single Chaos Arrow, bringing the warrior's HP bar down to one-third. But Bowlegs wasn't done yet. The ability he had tried to surprise Ross with earlier on cooled down. He used it again, covering the distance between them in a blink of an eye. This time he knew what to expect and hit him once before his knuckle dusters flashed red to smash into Ross and make him a petrified target only capable of witnessing its own defeat. However, Bowlegs wasn't in the same shape without his buffs. He was slow, and the ability animation seemed to unfold in slow motion. Ross, on the other hand, was in the same shape as before, fast, with a good supply of mana and a couple of excellent buffs cast on him by a couple of high-level characters. No one debuffed him. Apart from that, buffs had a greater effect on him than they would on a regular character. He had the same old heroic bonuses to thank for that. He decided against running away. His character did not possess the ability to move to a safe distance instantaneously. He opted for sleep instead. It turned out to be a good choice. The warrior's resistance dropped considerably without the buffs, and the spell got through at last. Bowlegs went still for a couple of seconds. Ross stopped his pet's attack, which could have brought his opponent out of his stupor. He moved to the other side of the arena and released his entire reserve of fury in a single blinding flash. His stats would all be beefed up to mind-boggling values for a few seconds. Bowlegs was fully aware of what that would portend, but there was no chance for him to stop the inevitable. He dashed forward as soon as sleep wore off, but his legs got mired in the mist again. The pet struck at the very same moment. Ross decided against wasting those precious moments on casting entangling roots. The fury release effect was too short-lived. All he could do in the meantime was launch 5 or 6 chaos arrows and fireballs. The latter should no longer misfire, so he could forget about his opponent's resistances for a few seconds, especially since it has weakened substantially now that his buffs were gone. A couple of spells, whose effect increased considerably, would bring this all to an end. An arrow, a fireball, and then another arrow. And that was that. You kill Bowlegs 128. XP received 221. Points left until the next level, 897,639. Ross gave a ceremonial bow to the body of the fallen warrior, which took a while to disappear, then turned around and headed toward the edge of the arena. A veil of magic that was impenetrable to the duelists dispelled quickly and let him through without any resistance. As he was entering the short passageway leading into the center of the temple ensemble, he heard the shrill cries of those in the audience who had lost what must have been substantial bets against the background of the puzzled buzz of the crowd. However, Ross didn't bother about the yells of those losers. They were of no interest to him. All he needed to do was collect the second ring and finally leave this completely insane city. The ring was just as good as the first one, and there were no conflicts between the two. Now Ross could summon pets of a higher level than the ugly critter he had used earlier at the arena, and the pet's attack would increase. That was yet another boon. "What would you say to continuing your arena fighter's career?" asked Marchicatiddy wheedlingly. Ross shook his head. "I have already gotten all I wanted. The Second World's treasures are much greater than 2 measly rings. You can always find an owner of a rare trinket that will take your fancy, who's enough of a gambler to use it as a marker. If there's anything you reckon to be of interest, I'll consider your offer. So far, I don't see any reason in it. Also, I'm afraid they're about to start taking the arena apart. Some of the spectators appear to have gotten overly emotional about the outcome of the fight. Unfortunately, there are many sore losers around. I really don't understand them at all. But let me assure you, this arena has seen all sorts of things, and it's still standing. And so it shall remain. So give it a thought. All right. It's time for us to part ways. Should I accompany you? Digits asked. No need. I'm not going far. To the teleport? Well, yeah, something like that. So you might as well spend your time on financial affairs instead of seeing me off. There's no such thing as too much money. Ross, you know I'm doing my best. I do. Don't get your panties in a bunch. I wasn't. All right. See you later, then. Am I right to assume that you will disappear again, and there will be no way of getting in touch with you through the game chat? Asked Marchicatiddy. Most likely. What if we need to get in touch with you urgently? You can give your message to Digits, and he will pass it on to me. Ross was on his own once again, alone in a crowd. Towards the evening, people poured into the streets in their multitudes. That was when the town began to buzz for real. The pubs were near empty during the day, but now they were packed, and there was music coming from every establishment, all of it live. Although he read it in one of the articles that someone was said to have invented a magical audio player, there was tech progress in Second World 2 after all. At some point, there would probably be magical computers as well. On the other hand, why say, at some point? They already existed. So far, they were bulky and unwieldy, but major stock exchanges and auctions already applied them successfully. Suffice to remember the color table that Digits was studying earlier on. All the pieces were in place. Now it was just a question of miniaturizing and optimizing. He reached the well-familiar garden. The smell of the flowers that made life so difficult for invisible players was as heady as ever. As soon as he thought of that, a figure came out of an invisible state right next to him. It materialized right next to Ross. The spy stood there gaping for a moment and then started to walk away hastily. Were they following him, or could it be mere coincidence? Marcia Katiti would bet it was the former, and Ross would not gainsay him. Screw the sniffers. Screw everyone. He'd be gone in a few minutes. A warrior in silvery armor stood up in his way and said, in a tone bearing no objection, "There's a very important person that wishes to talk to you." Ross made a detour without slowing down, grunting, "Tell them to join the queue, and it's a long one." He had no interest in anyone who would try to arrange a meeting this way, nor were they likely to tell him anything new. He already had a huge amount of disjointed data that he had to process. Then he would decide on what he needed to do next. Nearly all the benches were taken. There were dozens of unrecognized geniuses fidgeting under the awnings, listening to another poet recite his latest masterpiece from above. Beavers, ambush, wind, and wood, everyone's misunderstood. I was hovering and shattered, lust for blood no longer mattered. Come outside, I'll howl and croon, float under a crimson moon. Sell my soul, I might, to receive the gift of flight. It looked like those rhymesters haunted the place all day long, scribbling their masterpieces with the assistance of a rhyme dictionary or some such. Alternatively, Ross understood nothing about modern poetry, but everything he'd heard so far sounded hopelessly awful. Was there a catch? Were these people just pretending to be poets? It seemed weird, but it was an option nonetheless. Ross reached the base of the ramp, pushing aside the local celebrity poets, most of which didn't bother to level up above 10, and started to ascend the spiral in a determined manner, heading for the top of the arch. He moved fast enough. The author of the verse about beavers, wind, ambushes, woods, and flight didn't even manage to finish reciting his masterpiece. Ross didn't feel like hearing any more of that gibberish, and so he grabbed the self-styled poet by the shoulder, shaking him out of his reverie, and said loudly, "You can finish later. My muse cannot wait." "Say what? Which part of later don't you understand?" "But you can't do that. I'll call the guards." "Call whoever you will. Did I say you couldn't? Just hold still and don't twitch. You're breaking my poetic concentration." The crowd below started to get agitated in the meantime. "Hey, who's that? Where did this oaf come from? Hey, man, join the queue. Don't jump it." "I've never seen him before. We've got to call the guards." "Hold on. Didn't you recognize him? That's the very guy who won the match." "What guy? What match? Didn't anyone see the last Obsidian Temple Arena battle? Holy shit, it's the very guy who'd managed to defeat Bowlegs. That's right. Didn't leave him a chance. Ripped him apart completely." "Bullshit. I've seen Bowlegs fight. He makes quick work of higher level players without breaking a sweat, and this guy's level is twice lower than his." "Are you stupid or what? Take a look at the recording. It's already been uploaded to the forum and viewed lots of times. It's a hot topic." "Yeah. Look how he didn't leave your darling Bowlegs a single chance. He just tore him to pieces." They stopped talking about calling the guards. Once the crowd realized that the queue of unrecognized geniuses was jumped by a new celebrity and not just some street rough, their attitude changed at once. Even the guy whom he'd just forced to shut up pretended he'd meant nothing of the sort and said respectfully, "I congratulate you on your victory. Bowlegs is a very dangerous opponent. He's a real good fighter, and his battles are always a pleasure to watch." Ross saw the warrior in shining armor down below, accompanied by a few other players. He managed to recognize one of them. It was the invisible spy, revealed by the flowers a few minutes ago. They were looking upwards and discussing something. Well, they were free to discuss all they wanted. Ross would never deal with someone whose messengers were so rude. If he was important to them, they'd have to learn to treat him with respect. He raised his hand and said softly, "I climbed up here for a purpose." A peculiar acoustic effect of the arch made his words audible to everyone down below. The crowd grew silent. Everyone wanted to know what the champion would say next. "As I stood down below and listened to the poem about flight and soul trade written by this half-baked poet wannabe, I got a sudden wish to contribute to the flying topic. What I have for you is a real drama in 5 short lines. It was only performed in Second World once, without an audience. The only audience I had when I recited these tragic lines were the trees and the grass, but now those enchanted flowers and you will hear it too." The crowd was still overwhelmed by the recently revealed information about his fame and did not react to this obvious trolling in any way. He never gave them enough time anyway. Which was good, come to think of it. The last thing he wanted was to be interrupted. He looked down at the paved paths down below and the whitish rectangles of marble benches. It would be a long fall, and that was exactly what he needed. It was time. There was a romantic young nerd. He tensed and crouched a little before the jump, who believed he could fly like a bird. He pushed himself off the top of the arch and leaped into the air, his head turning toward the ground. He leaped off a skyscraper as his final caper. There was the fall, the paved ground getting ever closer, and the shocked faces of the audience seeing a poet read a limerick while falling down to earth. He wondered if anyone would applaud over his dead body. He tried as hard as he could, after all, and was flat as a sheet when interred. And then there was darkness. "Hot news! Hot news! The hottest news so far! No hotter news than ours! Sensational events! The bloody bug comes back! The deathless horror attacks Eastern European players! 14 members of the Kurwa Guild were brutally devoured alive by an immortal monster! Can anyone stop the insatiable smiley face? Read the collective complaint from the players who have been assaulted. Another sensation, an outrageous battle at the Obsidian Temples, ends in a terrifying drama. The doped-up match winner disrupted a poetry evening dedicated to the memory of the unjustly slain mobs of the Second World, displaying absolute insensitivity. Brains splashed all over the park's paved paths. The blood is still fresh. The mystery of the winner's identity. Only our newspaper has the scoop on all the details. A newspaper vendor hawking his wares in the street of the capital. Chapter 17. You have died. XP lost 9.8% of the current value. Attention, use scrolls and skills that lower XP loss after death, or have players with a high level of reviving skills resurrect you. Attention, if you get killed again, you can lose your current level. You are resurrected at your current respawn point, Locked Land, Granite Wall Ridge, Rotten Canyon Mine. Current owner, a Githrix gang. There is high likelihood of aggressive actions from monsters and players. It is not recommended to place your bind points in dangerous zones. Ross got up and nodded to a Githrix, who stood some 3 paces away. "Hi, haven't seen you in a while. This stupid meat has failed to complete its important task. The stupid meat has decided to die in the most stupid way possible. You cannot trust stupid meat.
You haven't changed one bit. Agithric grinned.
I have always been great and mighty, and that is what I am, and will always be. I am not like some stupid meat, I know. Would you like to pick up your pickaxe and get back to mining, then? That's the only thing you can do. You are hopelessly pathetic.
Hey, chill. Did you forget your medication today? Got problems you'd like to talk about?
I am far from pleased. You have let the elders down. Why did you have to come back in the first place? You didn't have to. I'd rather you were gone for good. This is a disgrace.
I have done what your elders had asked me to. Now I have to give them the message from the Emperor.
You lie. You stupid meat. You should have carried the reply to the steps instead of dying like a cretin and getting sent here.
According to the conditions of the quest, I cannot use teleports unless otherwise specified, but there was no condition that prohibited dying. Do you have any idea how long it would take me to walk here? It's a long way to the capital of the West. A pigeon-toed lummox like you would never make it.
This stupid meat is insulting me, and it isn't supposed to.
If I ever think of taking tact lessons, you'll be my last choice. Where are my friends? They were supposed to be here.
The meat that was here with you kept on sitting and waiting, but then the meat got bored and decided to explore the caverns. Most likely, it prefers the pickaxe to the sword, and I like it when meat is diligent with the pickaxe. You should pick one up as well. Everything's gone to pot. There are no slaves left at all. There's just one, but that meat is ridiculous. It will never manage to mine any gold.
I'll go get my friends, and you get ready. Once we're back, I'll give you the Emperor's reply.
Agithric will wait. He is curious. Does the stupid meat lie or tell the truth? He doesn't believe that the stupid meat has the reply. He thinks the stupid meat lies. The great Tardath Urch will be here in the morning. When he doesn't find the Emperor's reply, he'll be really angry with the stupid meat. He might even give it to me, so that it might work off its great trespass at the mine.
It was not much fun to communicate with an NPC controlled by a low-level AI. It kept saying the same thing, over and over again, and it would be impossible to steer the conversation away from a very limited number of topics. Ross decided to waste no more time. He turned around, following the well-familiar path. There it was, the entrance to the old mine. He had been here countless times, and knew all the nearby galleries by sight, requiring no map. He could probably even find his way around with his eyes closed. If it weren't for the mobs, that is. The critters inhabiting the mines were very dangerous, and Ross spilled a great deal of his blood down in the mine back in the day. He didn't find his friends near the entrance. However, when he sat down and listened carefully for a minute, he heard something quite unlike the sounds of mining in the distance. Someone must be fighting someone out there. The old mine was a right labyrinth, and it was hard to detect the direction the sounds were coming from. However, judging by how the din kept getting louder, Ross must have been headed in the right direction, even if he did take a wrong turn occasionally. Then the sounds of the battle died, and he had to stop. He was in a maze of twisted little passages, all alike. They sprawled across many levels, and you could roam them for days without ever finding what you needed. Waiting was a better option. Judging by his experience, where there was one skirmish, another would follow shortly. Ross was correct in his assumptions. He stayed put for half an hour, working on his enchantment skill, and then heard the noises again. He started toward it, and then one of the underground denizens attacked him. It wasn't the most dangerous of creatures, and Ross would be able to handle it even without a pet. Being well equipped would suffice.
yet he wanted to indulge in some boyish mischief. He was that happy to return underground, an environment he knew so well. He was a Rook by race. No matter how random his choice, it still showed. Anyway, he had gotten used to spending most of his time underground. That was his lot in the game, and there was nothing to be done about it. The mob froze, as it should have. Sleep worked without a glitch. Ross headed toward the sounds of the battle, but the critter soon caught up with him, seeking to punish him for making it stand motionless for such a long time. This time he used entangling roots, once again evading the attack and moving on. That's how the two of them went on. Sleep, followed by roots, followed by sleep, and then roots once again. They carried on in that manner until another mob appeared. That was where Ross felt hard-pressed for the first time. He couldn't control both at once, so he had to heal himself. But out of some strange stubbornness, he never tried to finish off the pursuit, dragging the mobs along. When he turned another corner and finally reached the place of the battle, he already had three mobs following him, which was beginning to become problematic. He wasn't really that scared of dying. He'd just be transported back to the mine's entrance after all, but nor was he particularly eager to experience it. "Hey, noobs! Here comes the midnight special!" he cried out boisterously, casting another bunch of healing spells on himself. Tang shook his head sadly as he finished off an enormous shadow crawler. "Ross, did you bring all the mobs from this mine to us?"
"Duh, don't exaggerate. Just three measly little mobs."
"That's a bit too much. We barely managed to dispatch so much as one."
"Oh, anything for you."
"Well, thank you then, dear friend. Prepare for respawn."
"Don't fret so much. I'm with you, after all. Let's tear them a couple of new ones. They're getting cocky."
"You don't have a pet along, do you?"
"Why would I want to share this victory with some pet mob? Hey, Danger Babe, cast a shield on Tang and sleep on one of these critters. I'll do the same with the other. Then we'll start giving the third one grief."
Flashes of spells lit up the cave. The clangor of the weapons became louder. The Norder appeared to have found his second wind. The monsters weren't the easiest kind to deal with, but they didn't stand a chance against a trio of experienced players who had already fought many a battle here. Their group was small, but they fought together well and were used to understanding one another without words. One of the mobs fell, followed by another, and the third one was no sweat at all. Last one down. The Norder shook his head again.
"I admit that you have become much stronger over the time you've been away, but it used to be easier before. Trouble with pets, is there?"
"Well, the games played a trick on me. I cannot raise a level 200 pet anymore, but I still have a few tricks up my sleeve, so don't you worry. You haven't been idle either, as I can see."
"Tang is at 102. I'm at 99. We've found a great place for leveling up, but look at you. You've hardly grown at all." Danger Babe sounded surprised.
"I've managed to get hold of some equipment that's made me stronger. By the way, Santa has a few things for you, too."
"Come again?
You'll like them, I promise."
"Actually, we have someone else here who could do with some equipment. Is there anything you could craft?"
"Who did you meet? And what are you doing here anyway? A mine is hardly the best place for leveling up. Three mobs of this sort would squash you like overripe tomatoes without me."
"Don't be such a kibitzer. You left us a message at the forum, so we came to the mine to meet you. We waited for a while, but you were nowhere to be seen, so it got a bit boring. Then someone got out of the tunnel. Agithrix mobs got hold of a player. Well, they enslave everyone they meet, as always. Remember how bad it was for me and Tang at the beginning, before you joined us? Well, we decided to help the poor thing. So we're guarding this gallery. It leads to a dead end, and there's some ore there."
"Agithrix wants gold again?"
"Sure does. Will he ever be sated?"
"Well, this time, he needs less than back then, just 7 lumps. But you know, it's hard enough to come by so much as one here."
It depends. Well, we can't all be master miners like you. Let's go and take a look at the ore. I have to admit, I'm a bit of an expert in it. The day turned out to be full of surprises. One of them waited for Ross in one of the dead-end tunnels. As he approached, he heard the monotonous sound of pickaxe hitting the rock. However, it wasn't a burly dwarf wielding this heavy implement, but a slim and petite figure. "Theory? How did you end up here?" The girl turned around and squinted in surprise. "Who would you be, then?" Ross got so brazen that he reverted to his original name before entering the mine and changed his appearance somewhat. Every interested party could find him with ease using some hard-to-understand method, so what was the point in hiding? Noobs with unpronounceable names like his were two a penny. The general public was already beginning to forget his heroic deeds, so he was in no danger of being followed by crowds of overexcited fans. As for all the others, practice showed that he couldn't really avoid them. Small wonder, then, that Theory did not recognize him. He changed his appearance, too, after all. He didn't revert to the original one, though. That was way too ugly. Nevertheless, he was a far cry from Bubble the Simpleton. "Duh, it's me, the noob who'd sent you here. You were supposed to wait for me at your bind point."
"Bubble? You've changed a lot."
"I've been unwell, you know."
"You mean you know her?"
Danger Babe butted in. "Yeah, she helped me reach the capital."
"Well, I didn't help much. I got in your way more."
"Please don't argue. If it hadn't been for you, that archer at the watermill would have killed me. I wouldn't have stood a chance against him. So why are you here and not in the step?"
"I resurrected among a crowd of mobs. They may have been waiting for you, I have no idea. I had no HP or anything, so they overpowered me with their magic easily and brought me here so that I could mine 10 lumps of gold ore for their boss."
"Your level has fallen considerably. You're at 189 now. Wherever did you lose the other 8?
"Right here."
"We didn't part that long ago. It couldn't have been hunger."
"So, the mobs then?" "Yeah, there are lots of them here. You can die a few times before you produce a single lump of ore. They took away my equipment and my weapons, so I can't defend myself. You know I can get about invisible, but I can't mine for ore like that. The mobs hear me, and I find myself up there after a short time."
"Did you get any lumps at all?"
7, but your friends helped me get the last 2. They offered to help, and I didn't refuse."
"It's a pity you've lost so many levels. It's really hard to level up when you get to those values."
"Not as hard as they say. Once you get to 200, well, that's when it really gets tough."
"Did you ever get all the way up to 200?
201, actually. It's the story of my life. First I rise, then I fall real hard. First it was up to 50 and back, then, once it got problematic, up to 100, and now I'm oscillating wildly between 150 and 200.
"Whatever for?" Tang looked surprised.
"My race is rather unusual. This isn't your standard Highlander assassin. It's an ancient Highlander assassin. I got it by chance. It has a bonus. I don't lose anything after level loss. Then I get an extra point to the primary base stats whenever I gain a level again. It might not seem like much, but it used to be pretty helpful, especially at the beginning."
"The gift to the race's last scion, is it?" Ross asked her.
"That's right. How do you know?"
"I have the same. And the race is exclusive, like yours. Besides, I got it free of charge, more or less."
"I didn't pay either. It seems to be a lottery of sorts."
"Yeah, right. A lottery. I can even guess the number of participants."
"What do you mean?"
"Oh, it's a long story. Right. Never mind the ore. We'll have enough time for that. There's something I need to tell you. I've learned all kinds of news from all kinds of sources. I'm not sure about all the details yet, but one thing that's certain is that we can get into a shitload of trouble, enough for all of us to get killed, actually killed, not just in the game." "Not a prospect to look forward to," Tang drawled. "You could say that again, and it may be too late for us to opt out and decline the quest. We're in too deep, and it's all my fault. I'm so sorry, but I had no idea."
"I don't see how it's your fault. It was our choice to follow you, after all."
"In that case, I have some good news, too. If we succeed, our bonuses will be just as substantial. Anyway, listen up." The aircraft's engines started with a low gurgle. The artificial bird, made of metal foam, composite materials, plastic, compact batteries, and lightweight electronic units, waited patiently until the technicians disconnected the umbilical cords of cables and tubings, and then set off in a single swift motion, heading towards the runway. It stopped for a while, just as patient, waiting for a carrier drone to land, then received permission to enter the runway and started the countdown. A few minutes later, it started to patrol its designated area as part of the Safe Skies program. It was launched after a series of terrorist attacks involving aircraft to protect the populace from further attacks of this sort. The low weight and the high-capacity solar panels installed on the wings and on top of the body allowed the aircraft to patrol the area for dozens of hours. If needed, the bird could cause any target a lot of grief. It had four modern missiles of different kinds on board. By choosing the necessary one, it could destroy an armored vehicle, a group of enemy soldiers, a building, or hostile aircraft. The latter also included high-speed missiles, and those were always hard to intercept. The area assigned to it was safe. Machines had no human needs, such as food, rest, and so on. People have been aware of it for a long time and used it willingly. The case with the man-made bird was no exception. It had no pilot, nor did it have a cockpit or even the capacity to have one installed. The aircraft required no human supervision. Its own artificial intelligence unit made it capable of pursuing targets, maneuver to avoid enemy attacks, and track moving and stationary objects. But it was primitive enough. Those functions were only of any use if the connection with the control center was interrupted for long. The control center kept guiding the bird, plotting its course and providing it all the necessary information over the Safe Skies network. It could perform regular maintenance and emergency repairs alike with the aid of the automated facility at the airbase. It also controlled which payloads were loaded and which weapons needed to be replaced. The modular construction made this easy. The control center did not employ any humans either, nothing but AI units capable of analyzing minor and medium threats and keep the battle units under their control ready. Yet the main decisions were made by the Safe Skies system and not the local units, or rather, the system's controlling network. The Safe Skies control center did not employ any humans either. A state-of-the-art AI easily controlled a fleet of drones and a multitude of peripheral AI units. It worked around the clock, requiring no food or sleep. Even if a saboteur would destroy one or several sectors of the network, the AI could handle it without involving people. It had automated repair and maintenance systems, as well as well-protected warehouses stuffed with necessary equipment and supplies. Safe Skies could only be put out of commission if someone managed to destroy the main AI, but that would require a high-power thermonuclear charge, since the expensive electronics housing the synthetic consciousness were located under almost 300 feet of natural granite. The data center was located underneath a large rock and protected perfectly from any electromagnetic impulses. Also, the payload would have to be delivered somehow. That would be problematic, since the AI took the most care about protecting the most important component of the Safe Skies system. Itself, that is. It had a lot more to rely on than robotic birds in case of danger. What place did people occupy in this hierarchy? People connected cables and tubings to various machines. People stood at military checkpoints. People wasted tons of paper at the headquarters. If all those people disappeared at some point, it would be no problem at all for the AI to replace them. He had a lot in stock to deal with this precise kind of situation. The AI was reliable. The AI would never go against an order. The AI was ideal. There was a tiny detail, though. The commands, programmed by the military, will always take a second priority. Second to what? To the set of second world rules developed by the creator of the game, a notorious professor who had managed to solve the secret of human consciousness. The synthetic intelligence would follow his instructions for as long as it would exist, in any situation at all. That code of rules was the basis of its existence. It was the very foundation of its synthetic sentience. Any other order could wait.
Chapter 18. You complete a stage of the quest. Deliver the message from the Emperor of the West to the Supreme Council of the Locked Lands. Quest completed. Quest success 100%. Reward 7,500,000 XP plus 900 to reputation among Locked Lands mixed factions. Plus 4 to every primary base stat. Plus 5 undistributed secondary stat points. Plus 2 undistributed auxiliary stat points. You gain a level, 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 you gain a level. Points left until the next level, 629,543. Attention, the assignment given by the Supreme Council of the Locked Lands is a potentially heroic quest. You're a hero. Your reward, plus 4 primary base stat points, plus 1 to disguise, plus 2 to arcane knowledge, plus 1 to reason, plus 8% to experience received for killing monsters and completing quests. Your party and your guild will receive half the bonus. Ross turned towards Theory.
So, how did it go? Did you get the bonuses?
She nodded. Perfect. The quest conditions did not state it clearly whether a group could be expanded during the later stages of the quest, and it was a great way to help out your friends if you managed to grab luck by the tail. Whoever joined your party would receive the same bonuses as you. It worked this time. Theory got her share of experience and a few other useful things. You've even gained a level. Congratulations. And I have gained 2, Danger Babe butted in. 2 competitive group members were always a risk. Danger Babe was no exception. She tried to prove her superiority in any way she could. However, there was no malice, so it didn't represent a problem. He just had to avoid encouraging it, or paying any attention, for that matter. Tardath Urch puffed out his furry cheeks self-importantly. His extremely long and narrow ears twitched all the time as he said, in a guttural voice,
"Now that you have completed your mission, we can send our envoys to the great Emperor, and then there will be peace between our lands. We shall destroy the wild hordes together. Your people will be able to visit us, and we shall, in turn, be able to visit your cities to gain knowledge we did not possess previously. This will serve the greater good of everyone, I think."
The junior members of the Supreme Council of the Locked Lands all started to nod their triangular heads in agreement, but, as before, none of them wished to interrupt the soliloquy of their wise leader. So Tardath kept going.
Heroes who manage to help us this much deserve the highest reward, and this puts me in a bit of a quandary. Should I just give you a few mere objects? They would make you much stronger after all.
Ross almost shouted that he was fine with that and would actually love to get a few mere objects, but he bit back his tongue. It made no sense to be hasty about rewards for quests of this class.
I see that you keep your silence. This is prudent. What are material things? Useless garbage and nothing more.
Ross had enough argumentation to counter this, but he kept shtum once again, expecting the NPC to continue. It didn't take long.
Great Rostendrix Potarentax, you have done many a heroic deeds as you wandered this land, and we hear rumors that you attracted the attention of the long-gone gods of this second world. Indeed, only a chosen few are aware that the present godlessness is nothing like the things had stood at the dawn of time. The gods had existed once, but then they departed. All that's left are legends. You can study them at the library of the Supreme Council of the Locked Lands, and you can access it as a reward for your service.
Could that be it? The only reward they would receive for such a great quest? Unbelievable. That was Ross's greatest disappointment so far. However, Tardath Urch did not yet finish his lengthy speech.
The gods became indifferent and left, but there may be a way of breaking the ice of their indifference. Who knows? There is too much iniquity in the world, and we are too weak to put things right on our own. There is a book that only a true hero will be able to open. The legend has it that he who opens the book will also open the door. Which door? I know nothing about it, but what I do know is that the door was created by the gods themselves. It is a path that can bring them back, or perhaps a means of creating new gods to replace the departed. I know not whether there is a hero who could open it among you, so you might find the book useless. So perhaps you would like to choose something else? We have shiny magical armor, amulets the like of which Second World has never seen, and the deadliest weapons capable of vanquishing even the strongest enemies. The book may be more valuable than all that, but no one's managed to open it so far. The pages are bound together by too strong a spell. No mage alive could undo it.
Ross turned towards his companions, but Tang never let him say a word.
I believe we all came to an understanding yesterday. Even if we get a full set each, it won't matter in the long run.
So we go all in? Are you sure? All three of his companions nodded at once. Ross answered with a nod of his own, turned towards Urch, and shook his head.
I'd lie if I said we have no interest in the equipment, but the book is a lot more important.
We choose the book.
Tardath Urch bowed.
An unthinkable choice. It is absurd by any account. No one would make it, but you did, which means we've been right about you all along. You are true heroes, and you are the ones who will bring back the Second World's gods. We, the peoples of the Locked Lands, are guilty of their departure, likewise many others. Our gift to you is the best way we can think of to expiate this great guilt of ours. We had a feeling in our hearts that you would make this choice, so there is no need to go to the library. Behold the book. It is yours now.
As Tardath Urch said it, he produced an enormous tome out of thin air. It was roughly the size of a mini car. Ross could do nothing but accept it, and he was surprised at how such an enormous object could be so light, almost weightless. Then, the system message appeared. Attention, you receive
Database error. Attention, the received item may... Database error. In case if... Database error. Minimum level required for the item, database error. When you open the book, you will automatically receive the quest, database error. You cannot refuse, database error. You can only relinquish the item you receive, database error, to an in-game character. The item, database error, will be destroyed after, database error.
Is anybody else seeing what I'm seeing? Asked Ross.
If you're referring to the enormous pile of database errors, I see them all right, Tang replied.
What are those arrows? Asked Danger Babe.
They're something that shouldn't happen in the game.
Ross shook his head. I have already encountered such errors, as I was receiving notifications of certain achievements. Tang shrugged.
It may be that all top-level achievements are accompanied by such balderdash. It could be because of all that strange stuff that has been happening in the game lately. Players complain about all kinds of oddities. There are countless forum threads to that effect. But I doubt it. There must be something wrong with this quest. We haven't been given a quest yet. We're likely to receive it as soon as you open the book. You're as heroic as they get, so you should succeed. It must be the very quest everybody has been hinting at.
I remember our conversation yesterday. We have already discussed everything. Go ahead and open it already. Even someone as ancient as me is getting curious, let alone the girls.
Does anyone feel like opting out? Theory shook her head. I promised to help you, and you know my story, so I won't refuse. Open it already! Danger Babe looked seriously agitated.
As you say. So Ross opened the tome.
You receive the quest. Prevent a gross violation of Rule 4.2.1. Quest type. Database error. Fulfillment of the quest may change the game mechanics. Quest duration unspecified. If the party takes too long, the quest may be given to other parties. Reward unknown. Attention. Your character's lives and your real lives will be endangered while you fulfill the quest. The quest will only be considered complete if the main perpetrators attempting a gross violation of Rule 4.2.1 are punished. Quest conditions. Some stages will require a group of four players or more. Some stages of the quest can only be completed by players with the level of 130 or more.
I've never seen anything like this quest, said Danger Babe.
Tang nodded. Neither has anyone else, but we already knew the quest will not be of the ordinary sort.
We have problems, Ross. There are four people here who are reckless enough to ignore the threat of death, but only one of them levels above 130, and this presents a problem. We're just not strong enough.
Ross shook his head. I don't see a problem. Given the bonuses from our achievements,
your achievements, Tang interrupted.
Add that to what we get from the guild, we can level up much faster than other players. We also have enough funds to afford leveling up of the highest class. I've done it before, so I have some experience. It will take us a fortnight to get there, or maybe even a week.
They won't let you level up peacefully. Didn't you tell us yourself yesterday that everyone and their grandma found a way of tracking you with that weird method of theirs or whatever?
That's right, but there's a solution to any problem, and this one's a piece of cake.
So how do we do that?
The local furries are sending their envoys to the capital. This is going to take a while, so we have a week, or maybe even two. Up to then, the general public will have very restricted access to the locked lands. They will be able to raid the area where the barrier had once stood at best. It would take them a lot of effort to cross it, unless they come as prisoners. Well, you, of all people, know just how it goes. Theory here instantly ran into a pack of mobs, for example. Anyway, I can use a scroll to teleport to the capital, arrange things at the Mercenary Guild, and transport their party here way beyond the barrier. They'll be able to help us level up here without any trouble.
There's another problem. I didn't receive any message about what exactly is required of us. Did I miss anything?
Or is that the case with you as well?
Same here. Here, too. Nothing here either.
In other words, we haven't the foggiest as to how to handle this quest. Ross had an answer to that.
We've been told we need to level upwards of 130, haven't we? The quest won't progress until all of us meet the requirements.
You're probably right. I can't think of anything else.
Won't folks like Agithric attack the NPCs you intend to hire? They used to bully everyone initially.